You're listening to Adams, Motion, and the Void.
I'm a lust and trust and boy. I hold my crest and soy. I wonder to behave, but the wild strides ten upon my fellow. Upon my fellow, upon my fellow man. I'm not supposed to rise in a nor'easter night, nor'easter night. I'm not supposed to rise in a nor'easter night.
One danger of the woods, not generally discussed, is that of the moose. Moose is one of the most criminally dangerous animals alive. It is the land-based equivalent of the great white shark. When I was a boy, I came face to face with not one, but two. And let me say here, the plural form of moose is meese. I have consulted lexicographers who admit that while meese has never been formally adopted, it is the proper lexicographic format. When pressed, my professional linguinis inform me that there is no real consensus in the language community about why meese will not be allowed as the plural form of moose. But they do admit there is a standing argument that the sonic dominance should never be surrendered in the plural form. Thus wolf may become wolves, as the sound of wolves has the intended drama of increase, whereas meese does not sonically dramatize the multiplying factor. I came upon a pair of meese in the woods. I saw them, and I must say, they looked like burned up giraffes or shredded trees. They were dipping toward something and eating or drinking. I had just come from the sand pits, a place of worship for me. I would throw dirt bombs and walk in the deep, long-standing mud puddles where frogs would leave their jelly bags, and I would dream of flying saucers, and I would play with the giant yellow industrial tractor which smelled like oil and grease and gasoline and sweat. And whenever I could, I urinated on one of the massive black tires. I don't know why. It was a way of joining myself into the tractor's scent, into the overall scene of man's dominance over nature. At any rate, the meese saw me. Like large chunks of insane meat, they were instantly hell-bent for my destruction. Their sound was the sound of airplanes crashing continually forward and never decelerating. I turned. My own impulse was to get to the tractor. For some reason, I believed that the meese would not be able to tolerate such a sign of civilization. I tumbled down the sand and gravel edge of the pits. It seemed like a huge 1,000-foot cliff. I ran out into the open as the meese heads appeared at the cliffside. These meese were baring their meese teeth, sharp brown, fuzzy teeth, gnarled and bizarre, and bloody gums that looked to have small animals clinging here and there. There was no hope for me. I backed quickly toward the tractor. The meese charged. I ran root around the great machine to the far side, no longer breathing. I was dead if they came around. And why wouldn't they? Silence. A few moments later, I peered around the enormous silver blade of the tractor's plow. The meese were both inclined to the regularly piss-infused tire, smelling it hotly. They turned suddenly, and then stumbled back, as though it was I who was the great monster. I don't remember all that followed, but the meese backed up slowly on their boxcar willy legs, and I began to pelt them with dirt balls, trying for those filthy animal-clung gums and those bizarre brown fuzzy teeth. Somehow, I had become Tractor Boy. Like one of those crazy fish that uses a secret flagellate to coax bigger fish in close and then pounces. The meese, I firmly believe, thought me to be some secret bait that the tractor had sent out into the woods. Now, I must say that many years have passed, and many bad things have occurred. Terrible, terrible accidents. But whenever anything bad occurs, I think, get to the tractor! Since that day, I no longer think of myself as a person, but as one part of a larger being, as the whipped-out flagellate of the sandpit tractor. I had a little bit of a run-in with a Looney Tune down at the White Pin, the combination bowlerdrome laundromat that bills itself as a bowler mat in the local circulars. Wash your things while bowling strings. I must say, I don't mind watching candle pins while I fold my trousers. There's something deeply reassuring in the sound of a bowling alley. The ball coursing down the lane, so noisy and bossy, but then disappearing into silence right before it hits the pins. Oh, a symphony of stone on wood. At any rate, I was lingering, waiting for my foldables and wash and dries, when I saw a woman angrily staring at me. "You're watching me. Unnecessarily," she said. She actually said, "Celery, unnecessarily." "Am I?" I asked. She ran a few steps toward me. I could tell she was insane at the distance from the chain-tight sound of her voice. But up close, her disorganized features made my stomach retch. Whatever piecemeal sabotage that had occurred, a nose here, an eye there, a mouth here, a tooth there, had the power to disintegrate the clarity in others. I felt my brain was entering into a straining hemorrhage. Her lips were like two pin-popped earthworms. The teeth were puffy and taffy pink and styrofoam big. And the nose was a pulpy thing, set somewhere off on the cheek, like a mound of skin-painted toilet paper. "You are wearing corn pants," she said. "You are corn." I was indeed wearing a pair of field-yellow pants, and my socks were of a hillside green. "I am corn," I said. "An amazing accusation. You are watching me." "Unnecessary," she said again. The urge to correct her loomed, but looming larger was the concomitant brain blister as delivered by her cubist blow. "My name," I told her, "is Sherwin Sleeves, and I am very nearly blind if my gaze was inappropriately directed toward you. I apologize, but I saw nothing with these dead eyes. In fact, as further proof, I cannot even see you now." "Tied as in a bowler ball," she seemed to say. Such was her repressed rage that her lips were no longer separating, and I could not exactly make out what she was saying. "Are you here to bowl?" I asked her, tossing up a friendly face. "Or perhaps doing some laundry?" "I am not a whore," she said. "I am not a whoremonger," I said. "You are," she said. "You are a monger. A cornmonger. A cornmonger." "I'm a very old man," I said. "I have very little interest in reality, or at least I have no interest in this cluttery part of it. You'll please excuse me." And I turned my back on her and faced the candle pins. I watched a woman in a house coat commit a ball down the lane and then shove an entire candy bar into her mouth, which she then left hanging out like a fat, blobby cigar. I knew it was coming, but still it was a shock when the disorganized face shouted, "He's a dirty old cornmonger!" I was struck. Somehow there is a poetry in psychosis that allows for a kind of bizarre accuracy in such descriptions. I was, and am, at the bottom of the well, a dirty old cornmonger. And I suggest, if you're ever accosted by a Looney Tune, and they ever give you your comeuppance, take it as the universe putting pen to paper and writing for you a special little poem that goes to the heart of your what-have-you-ness.
We three, we're all alone, living in a memory. My echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we're not a crowd, we're not even company. My echo, my shadow, and me. What good is the moonlight, the silvery moonlight that shines above?
You're listening to Adam's
with my shadow,
Motion
I talk
and the Void
with my echo, but where is the one I love? We three will wait for you, even till eternity. My echo, my shadow, and me.
We three, we're all alone, seem like we're living in a memory. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we ain't no crowd. Fact is, we ain't even company. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. You know, I've been wondering, what good is the moonlight? That silvery moonlight that shines way, way up above. Here I walk with my shadow, I talk with my echo, but where is that gal that I love?
We three will wait for you, even till eternity. My echo, my shadow, and me.
The Adventures of Superman. Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a train.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
1953, the second season of The Adventures of Superman. I was a great fan of the show, not so much because of Superman's superpowers, but because Clark Kent, like myself, came from a faraway planet and would forever experience the frigid air of his absolute stranger's isolation. We were both aliens. There was one episode which lodged deep within me, and I believe I think of almost daily. The episode was called The Face and the Voice, and it concerned a clever villain named Bulder, who underwent plastic surgery to look just like Superman in order that he might take advantage of such a look in the performance of his dastardly deeds. The surgery was easy enough, but Bulder was of the old Dick Tracy school of bad guy. A Bowery boy with a mouthful of Jimmy Cagney nails. Now see here, pal. But Clark Kent was a rather modest man with a middle-class accent. He didn't speak like a henchman. So, Bulder began to undergo some significant voice training with the aid of a metronome and a single line which he repeated over and over and over again. I look like Superman. Why don't I talk like Superman? I look like Superman. Why don't I talk like Superman? At the end of his training, he did. But I bring up this story to once again illustrate the power with which I believed my own alien nature. I was in my 20s when I saw the episode. It didn't stop me from going to the mirror and beginning to repeat, I look like Superman. Why don't I talk like Superman? It wasn't that I was begging for Superman's voice so that I could go rob the city blind in tights and a cape. No. It was my way of unfurling my soul toward that object, that special place in the universe I knew I might call home.
I look like Superman, why don't I, Superman? I look like Superman, why don't I, Superman? I look like Superman, why don't I, Superman? Look like Superman, why don't I, Superman?
I had decided only to share those stories and revelations which, in the larger scheme, left the crueler and greater portion of my autobiography by the curbside and in the gutter. Yet something inside me pricks. Something inside me yearns for at least a little personal confession. Of the many deeply private experiences of my life, the first occurred when I was a boy of 13. I was in a fire, which accounts for my excessively burned-sounding voice. It also accounts for the fact that I never married or had children, and it is not the case that my face was burned beyond recognition. My hair grew back, and the facial burns I did have were mended for the most part. No, it is a deeper and much more personal wound. To call it a wound would suggest a type of aesthetic damage, where what I mean is a type of obliteration. I am 79 years old, and my throat still tastes of house fire. The confession is dark. I will lighten it with another. I have not spent my entire life on this planet. I have lived elsewhere. You've been listening to Atoms, Motion, and the Void.